if you are holding your money on Coinbase in the normal brokerage, which like the vast majority of people do, they do have security issues where I have seen countless people get SIM swapped. As the technical best practices and security in the space continue to ratchet up, the biggest weakness actually becomes the human.
The human.
So, why try to hack a multi-million dollar internet infrastructure that has, amazing team of experts securing it when you can just call up Granny on the phone and say the right things to get them to hand over the keys to the kingdom?
I've also been behind the scenes for a long time, and my team has encouraged me to be more public, and it's like, privacy, a more privacy focused business. What are your thoughts on all this? You mentioned it is a little more uncomfortable coming to such a large conference, right?
It's a risk. It is a risk being a known Bitcoiner, especially a known early Bitcoiner.
Very true.
Because people are going to assume that you've got $1 billion and you're just walking around, and all they need to do is find the right time to kidnap you and start beating you, right? And so, that's one of the many things, of course, that I track is, what is the evolution of the physical security of the whole Bitcoin space and Bitcoin holders in general. And how is the criminal element evolving? Because this is security is a constant cat and mouse game.
Very true, very true. We're here at day three of the Bitcoin conference here in Nashville. I'm here with Jameson Lopp. We're going to just have a quick conversation. I'm going to ask him some questions and talk a little bit about Bitcoin. So welcome. Thanks for talking to me, Jameson. Appreciate it.
Always happy to talk about Bitcoin.
So I'm a big fan of your work. I've been listening to you for, it feels like a decade almost now at this point, right?
So accurate.
Accurate, right? I think you've had some great episodes with like Peter McCormick early on, which I really jived with and listened to. So thank you for all your contributions to the space. How do you feel about this Bitcoin conference? Like what are your thoughts taken away from day three?
It's different, right? I mean, look, I'm a technologist. I prefer going to the really nerdy small conferences where I don't get stopped every 20 feet by people who want to either pitch me something or fanboy or whatever. It's a very different vibe as the space goes mainstream. And of course, now we're at the like heads of state, politicians coming in, and I mean, I'm not a fan of like political pandering and stuff. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how many of the promises from the politicians actually come true.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a fascinating thing to observe
the game theory,
the
right?
Evolution. Yes, it is.
Crazy
it's the game theory, right?
Crazy.
Because Bitcoin works for so many different reasons, and it's not just the technological reasons. It's because for whatever reason, Satoshi managed to hit on like just the right game theory, the incentive structure of all the different moving pieces.
It's fucking brilliant, man. Mm-hmm. Fucking brilliant. If you really go down the cypherpunk rabbit hole and look at all the stuff he did, it's just, every day I almost learn something new about Bitcoin, right? Today I was learning about sidechains and all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's just so many fascinating little rabbit holes you can go down. I've also been behind the scenes for a long time, and my team has encouraged me to be more public, and the past 4 years have been a little further. There's been a lot more political antagonism, right? Which was predicted in the game theory and talked about. First they fight you, and then they join you, all these different things, right? As like a more privacy focused activist, what are your thoughts on all this? You mentioned it is a little more uncomfortable coming to such a large conference, right? I feel more at home at like Mining Disrupt and like the mining conferences personally, because that's my little niche within Bitcoin. But for you, obviously, you've put out a lot of content and, very privacy focused. What are your thoughts?
It's a risk. I'm taking a calculated risk. And I think a lot of the other people kind of in my same peer group, I mean, whether they know it or not, I think a lot of them still haven't realized it. And I keep trying to bang it into their heads. Like, this is a risk. It is a risk being a known Bitcoiner, especially a known early Bitcoiner.
Very true.
Because people are going to assume that you've got $1 billion and you're just walking around, and all they need to do is find the right time to kidnap you and start beating you, right? or to find where you live. And so that's one of the many things, of course, that I track is what is the evolution of the physical security of the whole Bitcoin space and mm-hmm. Bitcoin holders in general. And you know, like, how is the criminal element evolving? Because mm-hmm. you know, this is security is a constant cat and mouse game.
Very true. Very true. Very true. I mean, part of it is, you know, hey, you know, put it on record, you know, my Bitcoin's in a cold storage device. I don't have access to it. I can't give it to you, you know, and that's, you know, for myself, that's largely, that is true, right? So right. majority of my Bitcoin is like, yeah, you can get a couple $100 worth out of me on my hot wallet or whatever, but you're not going to be able to, no matter what you do to me, you're not going to be able to get it because it's stored in a, you know, in a safe somewhere or somewhere private and, you know.
Yeah. And this is something that I have more of a front row seat to because I run a security company. So mm-hmm. we have clients.
Yeah.
And very small percentage of them who have been attacked, but the ones who have been attacked, there have been very specific methodical targeting of people, like doing surveillance on them,
social engineering,
to figure out a lot about them in order to more perfectly attack them and you know, extract maximum value.
So talk to me a little bit about Casa. What are you excited about that you guys have? What led you to, you know, really get involved there?
Yeah, well, you know, the primary thing is we keep learning like what the best practices are when it comes to security for your Bitcoin. And we learn from other people's mistakes, you know, preferably not from our own mistakes. but, you know, before I founded Casa, I was at BitGo for several years and, you know, we had several mistakes there and we learned, we iterated, patched up vulnerabilities. And you know, what we do at Casa is we take the best practices and we combine that with the best hardware and we write what we hope is like the best, most useful, easy to use software. And then we train Bitcoin experts to basically be like me and be able to actually get on the phone with people and help them make, you know, very consequential decisions about their Bitcoin holdings and keys and even planning with things of like inheritance.
I do the same thing for all the old ladies at my Bitcoin meetup. I just don't get paid for it.
Yeah. And you know, and I think that's true for a lot of people. Like this is one of the ways that the sort of viral nature of the Bitcoin network works is that a lot of people get into it because someone that they trust has been into it and can, you know, convey some of that knowledge to them.
Very true. What are your thoughts about these ETFs and the security behind those? I often think about this, right? Because it seems like everybody now is just using Coinbase to custody everything. Everything's there. It's like, it seems like that could be a major point of vulnerability there. I mean, and the current administration, the government has done no favors to that. They've actually made it worse because, you know, it's impossible for a, you know, for there to be different custodians, especially ones that are in the industry of being custodians, banks, whatever, that do that for a living. And you'd hope to have more participants so you could spread and diversify that risk. And instead, what seemed to happen is that, you know, everybody and their mother's using Coinbase Prime and that's it. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I could talk about that for an hour, but
but we're going to have to.
Yeah, I mean,
not today though.
Okay, so I have,
but at some point,
I have multiple issues. So first of all, I'll state that as far as I'm aware, I have no reason to believe that Coinbase has poor security practices for their cold storage. But we don't know what those are, right? It's a black box. But I have no reason to believe that they're doing poorly there. Like they have spoken about some of their practices in the past, and they were quite impressive. However, I will say that, you know, if you are holding your money on Coinbase in the normal brokerage, which like the vast majority of people do, they do have security issues where I have seen countless people get SIM swapped and get your funds completely drained.
Probably get like, you know, once a month at the meetup, we get somebody with, you know, hey, this happened or, you know.
Yeah. And the social engineering is also becoming more sophisticated.
Like,
as we heard from Junseth, you know, getting the recording of one of those like 20-year-old or if not like teenage social engineers, they're going out there and they're realizing that as the technical best practices and security in the space continue to ratchet up, the biggest weakness actually becomes people. The human.
Yeah. Humans always.
So you know, why try to hack a multi-million dollar internet infrastructure that has, you know, amazing team of experts securing it, when you can just call up granny on the phone and say the right things to get them to hand over the keys to the kingdom.
With AI and, you know, the voice generation and all this stuff, it's an interesting field. And it's like a kind of a, by no means an expert in your domain and the privacy aspect of Bitcoin when it comes to security and all that. I mean, that's, I'd like to learn about it, and I try my best, and, you know, try to get just know enough to be secure, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like a cat and mouse game, watching it evolve and change over time.
Yeah, so, you know, we're never going to perfectly solve everything. The only thing that I think we can really hope for is we keep pushing the bar forward, and it really it is a matter of making people comfortable with taking on some responsibility. And if anything, you know, this may be a like multi-generational societal level shift that needs to happen, because if you look at the arc of history, it makes sense how we got to where we are today. We have evolved our society and our economy through specialization of tasks. This allows for people to be far more efficient by, you know, optimizing one very specific thing. And the result of that is that we've created a civilization where you outsource many, many aspects of your life. And this is great from an economic perspective, because your quality of life goes up. But what we, I think, never really realized until very recently is that this actually introduces a lot of systemic risk and fragility into the fabric of society itself.
No doubt about that at all, right? And just even, you know, what you said, personal responsibility, accountability, it's just the culture of society itself at this point. There's, you know, we're lacking in that area. I think it's obvious to see. Nobody wants to take personal accountability, personal responsibility for their decisions. Right. You know, like I see it even at the meetup when it's like, oh, you know, talking to people that get scammed, it's like, you know, hey, listen, you know, this sucks. It happened. But like, how can we prevent this from happening again? What did you do wrong here? You know, some people, I sat with you when we went over the ledger, you know, we looked at the seed phrase, you know, I wasn't going to help you go through the whole procedure. Right.
Yeah.
I made you write down. I told you I can't look. I told you never give this to anybody.
Yep.
So like, why did you give it to somebody? Right.
It's
like these little things. Right. And, you know, again, people are always going to make mistakes, and part of life is you learn from your mistakes. Right. So I've never had somebody that got scammed, you know, personally from people that I know, I've never seen one of those people get scammed again. Right. So you learn your lesson. You get your education. And again, all this stuff, this is such a nascent technology that like, it's not in the education system. No one's learning about this in school. I mean, this is the only way to learn, is that you have to go seek it out, right? So hopefully in the future, we'll see that. And the educational scene is changing. I mean, even what they did this year at the conference, the Bitcoin Camp for Kids, I think that's fucking awesome, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to get them started young.
Yep. So what are you most excited about for the next couple of years in the industry and ecosystem?
Well, I mean, you know, since I focus on the technology side, for me, it's more about continuing to shepherd, especially scalability improvements. But the thing that I'm most focused on is that we can get a few protocol changes in that will actually just open up the ability for people to develop Bitcoin-related layers. Right now, it's way too difficult.
Do you think that's possible, though? I mean, it seems like the protocol itself is so resistant to any change, especially at that base layer. I mean, that's an uphill battle.
I mean, I think it's possible, because we already have a number of good improvement proposals, and we know that like they can be implemented. Like the code already exists in many cases. It's just a matter of really.
Which one are you the most excited about right now, and what's the biggest resistance?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of new functionality, Opcat seems to be one of the more powerful things, but Rusty Russell came out recently with this idea of like the script, Great Script Restoration Project, which is basically re-enable a lot of the original functionality that got turned off many, many years ago.
Yeah. But so, Satoshi turned that off
initially. Correct. Right?
He just didn't want, he wanted to make sure everything
out of an abundance of caution.
Which, you know, on the base layer makes sense, right?
Right. But now we actually, and one of the reasons why we know that it's safe to do this is that there are other networks like Bitcoin Cash that re-enabled it
something
years ago. So like we know that it's possible to run these other parts of the protocol safely. And that would enable more permissionless innovation of people to, you know, create other layers.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. It's, I think Vitalik, I think, long time ago was talking kind of about what you're saying, and that's eventually why he went and founded Ethereum, to have a different programming language that was more feasible.
That's part of the problem, is that if it's too difficult for people to build in the Bitcoin ecosystem and there's some specific functionality that they're striving for, then, you know, they're going to take the path of least resistance.
Makes sense. And you know what, you know, kudos to a lot of these other, a lot of people are like, oh, screw all these other networks. Well, like, they're experimenting, they're testing things, and Bitcoin can see what works, what doesn't, and potentially institute change. And I'm not personally opposed to that. I mean, I think the base case is this, you know, global digital store of value, this decentralized money, and, you know, this permissionless money that is ultimately decentralized. And I think as long as we can keep that, you know, we can potentially do other things, as long as we know that they're safe. So very interesting, very interesting. You know, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I really appreciate you hopping on with me. I've, you know, followed you for a long time and followed your work. So thank you for all that you've done. Appreciate it. And we're launching a new podcast here pretty soon called Cypherpunk. So love to have you on sometime. My first guest is going to be Aaron Van Weerdum. He's coming down for a week or two to spend with me, and we're going to dive into his book. So Genesis.
Yeah.
So if you haven't read it, get yourself a copy.
Oh, I have.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
You bet.